to Novel Pairings, a podcast dedicated to making the classics readable, relevant, and fun. In every episode, we'll bring our big English teacher energy, discussing the modern literary landscape in context with the classics. Along the way, we'll talk about the books we love and the books we loathe, and help stock your TBR pile with old and new reads for every literary taste. Today, we're sharing anticipated spring releases with backlist pairings. Hey, Chelsea.
Hi, Sarah.
These are always really fun episodes to record. If you all are new, we do these 3 to 4 times a year, kind of depending on how many seasons of new releases we're very excited about. But we are very excited about the spring reading. So Chelsea and I are each going to share 6 new release spring titles that we are looking forward to, and a pairing, a backlist pairing, either backlist or even classic that we think would enhance the reading of this new release, or just something to pick up if this new release sounds good and you can't wait. And we'll tell you up front, we're each going to share about 6, and then we've saved 3 each for our Patreon bonus feed. So if you're not a patron yet, now is a great time. Hop over to patreon.com/novelpairings. Join. You can catch up on all of our Custom of the Country content if you join at the Literature Scholar level. Otherwise, if you join at the Literature Lover level, you get 4 bonus episodes a month, including these bonus spring picks. So Chelsea, we were talking ahead of time about how we're like, well, if we move quickly, we can share more books. And we never
do. We were like, we're not capable.
Let's just dive right in because we have a lot of exciting books to talk about. We're going to share March, April, and May books. Do you have anything outside of those months?
I am really excited about this book. So this is actually a February release. It's out now. So go get it. But it is Neighbors and Other Stories by Diane Oliver. And if you've heard of this, it might be because you've seen Tayari Jones posting about it or sharing about it on her Instagram. Diane Oliver was a student at the Iowa University Writing Program. That caught my eye right away because I'm near the University of Iowa right now. It's just, I mean, it's a very well-respected institution, this creative writing program. So she was a student there and she was working on this collection of short stories when she died in a fatal car accident, unfortunately, and she was very young. This was in the 1960s. And so this is one of those like pulled from the archives classics. Tayari Jones writes the introduction, and then this collection of stories is largely about Black characters who are dealing with Jim Crow in various ways in their lives. And it just sounds so good. I am really intrigued by short story collections lately, and just the idea that this might be an undiscovered classic. I really respect Tayari Jones as an author, and the way that she is promoting this book is just kind of fascinating to me. For a contemporary author to really just champion a book by an unknown author from the past. So it sounds really good. It's got a great cover. And there are so many possible pairings for this, but I thought immediately of our Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry episode. Love that book. It's so good. A great family exploration, excellent characters. You could absolutely read a short story about every single character in that book. So if you liked Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry, or you're interested in picking up a short story collection this spring, or just a hidden classic intrigues you, I want more people to know about Neighbors and Other Stories by Diane Oliver. I think it sounds so good. It's just a book to shout about.
It sounds great. It is so cool when a beloved contemporary author champions a book. Also, this book has such a good cover. I feel like
so good.
Yeah. I mean, I know we are not supposed to judge a book by a cover, but first of all of us do. And second, I just think sometimes you can tell that the team behind the book just loves it. Just like,
yeah,
they get it, they love it, they really put a lot into it. And that is just how I feel looking at that book.
Yeah, and I know that authors often write introductions for other books, especially for classics. And again, like, this isn't necessarily a canon classic just because it's undiscovered. It's got to, like, be read and discussed, right? But just the way that, like, Tyree Jones is doing a whole press tour basically for this book, I don't know. It just, the whole thing really intrigues me, and I've loved reading about it. So, I don't know. I think people should pick it up.
All right. My first book is out on March 5th. It also has a great cover. It is The Extinction of Irina Ray by Jennifer Croft. And Jennifer Croft is an award-winning translator. She has won the Booker Prize for her translations of Olga Tokarczuk's work. And Olga Tokarczuk is a Polish author, like a very well-renowned, very political Polish writer who I love. And okay, I say that because here is the premise of Jennifer Croft's kind of first novel. She's written one other book herself.
Oh, okay.
But it was published as a memoir in the US and a novel in the UK.
Whoa.
I know. Isn't that interesting? So
yeah.
I'm not sure if I should call this her first novel or not, but it's definitely different from that book.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the premise. 8 translators arrive at a house in a Polish forest. And the house belongs to a world-renowned author named Irina Ray. And all 8 of these translators, each translating to a different language, are there to work on her magnum opus together. So obviously they're each doing their own translations, but they're like, they're only like allotted time with the manuscript at her house and together. And they're like helping each other a little bit, as like discussing translation as they work. And then the author disappears and they have to figure out what happened to her. And also they uncover some secrets about her writing. And this book is described as hilarious. So I always take that with a grain of salt, but I know that the tone of this is not going to be super earnest or super dark. Like there's definitely going to be an element of humor, maybe even satire to this book. I know that our community is really interested in translation. And so I think a novel that focuses on translators solving a mystery might be of interest to our group. I know I'm really curious about it. I feel like it could go off the rails, but I have hope. I didn't know what to pair this with. It sounds unlike anything I've ever read. I have 2, though. I chose Intimacies by Katie Kitamura, which is a very different book about a woman working at The Hague as a translator, but the piece about translation and the importance of language, of course, seemed to speak to this. And then my other pairing was, I don't know, The Thursday Murder Club, like a funny mystery. People who aren't detectives but love puzzles and projects banding together to solve a mystery, a disappearance. I don't know. I think obviously The Thursday Murder Club is so tonally specific. People love it for its tone. So I certainly don't want to promise you that this book is going to fit that tone. But it might be the case that if you like that kind of premise, a group of people coming together to solve a mystery that they really have no business solving, then The Extinction of Irina Ray by Jennifer Croft might work for you. And that's out March 5th.
I thought that sounded familiar. And then I looked in my neck alley and it's sitting there. So
oh, nice.
I might pick that one up soon.
Yeah, sounds fun.
All right. As far as March selections, Sarah, have you heard anything about Rainbow Black by Maggie Thrush?
Nothing.
Okay, this sounds really good. It's out March 19th. And again, with the cut, like spring covers are so good. I don't know if it's specifically this year or if it's a spring thing. Like they're really colorful, they're bold, it's great. Anyway, Rainbow Black by Maggie Thrush. The description says it's part murder mystery, part gay international fugitive love story set against the 90s satanic panic and spanning 20 years in the life of a young woman pulled into its undertow. So this opens and there's a 13-year-old girl named Lacey. She's in New Hampshire and she's growing up and her parents are very hippie. They run a daycare center and they're like out in rural New Hampshire doing their own thing with this daycare center. Just super hippie living. And then the satanic panic hits. It's 1990 and her parents are thrown into jail with all of these accusations about child sexual abuse and just satanic stuff with the panic. And kind of fast forward several years, there's a horrible murder and then she changes her life and makes a significant choice. There's not a lot of detail here in the synopsis to go off of. It's been a long time since a thriller has intrigued me, but all of the all of the elements of this are really interesting. It sounds a little bit weird and like a literary thriller. And I just think that the satanic panic and kind of the reemergence of conversations around it today is really interesting. Like, why are we talking about it today? What connections does it have with modern society? All of that stuff is fascinating. So Rainbow Black, out March 19th. I don't know. I think that I'll pick that one up. As far as a pairing, it's tough to choose a thriller to pair here. Just because I haven't read thrillers in quite a while, but as far as pairing something thematically, Now Is Not the Time to Panic by Kevin Wilson. I really loved that book. And it also deals with the satanic panic. And it's about a couple of kids who like make some art. It ends up kind of sparking a little bit of panic in the town and gets ties to the satanic panic when really they're just trying to make art. And it's all about how art, like you lose control of it once it goes out into the world. It's a great book. Obviously, I think tonally, way different than Rainbow Black. Rainbow Black is like fast-paced thriller, but Now Is Not the Time to Panic if you're kind of interested in, I don't know, looking at those connections, kind of seeing why the satanic panic is suddenly being brought up in art and literature and cultural conversation. That's a really good one by Kevin Wilson. So that's Rainbow Black by Maggie Thrush.
All right. I have another satire. I mean, part of why we chose satire as our spring season was because there are so many satirical novels coming out. And we thought it would be interesting to have that conversation. So we should pick maybe one or two of these satires to read and discuss in detail. I have not read Victim by Andrew Boriga yet, but I have heard such good things. I've like only seen rave reviews, which makes me a little bit nervous, but also excited. It's a short book, less than 300 pages, and it is about a college student named Javier Perez, Javi, and he kind of learns from people who maybe mean well that he could embellish some aspects of his life, some of the harder parts of his life, to maybe get a leg up in the world, to impress or, you know, appeal to a side of university admissions committees, to maybe write about things that newspapers and online platforms want to hear about. So he kind of uses this embellished life to make his way as a journalist for a literary magazine. And the editors, of course, think that he has this great unique perspective beyond the typical like upper middle class white folks who tend to work in that field. And then he writes a viral essay. But then somebody from his past comes back and is like, this is not your life. This is not exactly truthful. I think it's going to be really, really interesting. It's the kind of satire that I think that I really tend to like, which is exploring the importance of identity and some of the like cultural strifes we have, but also like taking it so far that it makes you think about things in a whole new way. And of course, talking about writing and authorship and who has a right to tell certain stories. Like, is it okay to write about things that you haven't experienced firsthand if you feel closely connected to them? What's the line? So that's Victim, and it is out March 12th. And of course, it sounds like an interesting pairing for Yellowface, but I really want to pair it today with Erasure by Percival Everett, which is the, I think 2001, maybe it was published in the early 2000s, which I could not believe when I read it recently. And then it was recently made into the Oscar nominated film, American Fiction. I loved this book. It is about a Black writer who writes very kind of classically inspired novels. And he is dealing with a lot of family issues as the novel takes place. But he's also like really thinking about his career. He can't get his latest manuscript published, even though his books have been pretty critically acclaimed. Nobody's buying them. And then there's this breakout book by a debut Black author that our primary character, Monk, thinks is very much pandering to what white readers want to think about Black people and Black art and Black stories. And so he decides to write a satire of that book. But of course, his satire takes off. And it's just fantastic. Percival Everett, absolute genius. There's so much nuance to that book. And I think that Victim very much sounds like it's in conversation with Erasure. And I liked the movie too, but I really think that people should read the book, especially if you've seen the movie, because there are some very intentionally different choices that the movie makes that I think it's important to think about. So Victim and Erasure.
All right, my one other March book, also out on the 19th. This one I've read and I loved so, so much. It is a Victorian era historical romance titled The Love Remedy by Elizabeth Everett. And okay, talking about gorgeous covers in this episode, we're going to have to include a bunch of covers in our Substack newsletter or something so that everyone can see what we're talking about. But this cover is gorgeous. I think that I texted it to you after reading the book or after the cover came out, because I read the book before the cover was out. And I was like, this is gorgeous. And I would love to see more historical romances with covers like these that have a really wide appeal. It's like botanical and just, it's beautiful. Anyway, the book is beautiful too. Absolutely loved it. One of my favorite romances of the year already. So this is about a Victorian apothecary. All of the apothecary information and like historical background in this is fascinating. And she, Lucy, this apothecary, she's running her family's business. This apothecary has been in her family for generations. But now it is hers. It's her responsibility. And her sister's off studying science in a different place. Her brother is kind of wayward. And so she just feels the weight of the world on her shoulders, keeping this business going, keeping her family safe and funded and with a roof over their heads. And she had this relationship with a guy who stole her recipe for lozenges. And now he is making a bunch of money off of these lozenges. And she is like, you rat. But she also has a recipe for a croup treatment that went missing. And she thinks that maybe this same guy stole it. And so she hires an accountant slash private investigator. And Jonathan Thorne, and he's very like strict and grumpy, of course. He has a daughter. They actually move in to a different room in the shop so that he can be there. And so he does a bunch of accountant things for her because looking through all of those papers is good for his investigation. But also he's like big and brawny and can, you know, fight people if he needs to. So there's so much going on here, but it's not too much. It all really works well. The themes in this specific romance felt so modern and tangible for today, while still being really grounded in real, rich, vivid historical detail. And I loved everything from the characters and their romance to the descriptions to the characters' jobs and some of the side plots. There's kind of a hostile political group because Victorian era romance, I don't know. I think it's really interesting because we've got kind of this women's movement that's starting to arise a little bit in this era and the backlash that's happening to it. And you can really see that in this book. But I loved Jonathan Thorne as a hero. He's got this really great relationship with his daughter. I really related to Lucy being stressed out and worried all the time, and the way that they, the way that he kind of takes care of her, and the way that she and her family welcome him in. There's a little bit of found family element there. It's just really, really, really good. So, as if you're looking for another Victorian era, super well written, richly detailed romance, I really like the Mimi Matthews Sirens of Sussex series. And I think that that pairs really well here. The Love Remedy is open door romance. There are some steamy scenes, but Mimi Matthews writes, I would say, chaste romance. I don't even know if there's kissing on the page. Chaste or closed door. And I just think there's something really fun about the Victorian era romances that are coming out right now. It's refreshing change from all of the Regency. I think it's just, I don't know, thematically really interesting. So that's The Love Remedy by Elizabeth Everett. And I really loved it so much.
That sounds so good. And it'll be interesting to see, this is what you said when you texted me, if we see a new cover trend emerging in romances. I know this one's an outlier so far, but it feels like maybe we're at a tipping point with the cartoon covers.
Yeah, the cartoon covers, I think a lot of historicals have shifted away from the real models on the covers. I don't know. The whole cover conversation is fascinating and maybe worth a bonus episode investigation sometime.
Oh, yeah. All right. My next one is James by Percival Everett. Second Percival Everett mention on the episode. And our listeners probably know about James already, but I have read it and it was fantastic. And so it just, not that it needs my stamp, but I'm putting my metaphorical stamp on this book. It is a masterpiece. It's so good. And I am not a fan of Huckleberry Finn, as we definitely discussed on our episode of it. Listening to our episode could be a great way to prep for reading James if you're interested in that, but I don't think you need to be super familiar with Huck Finn. I found that interesting, of course, the comparisons, but it's just a great story. And James as a character, how Everett creates him on the page, is just such a fantastic character. So this is a retelling, reimagining, repositioning of The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn told through the perspective of Jim, the enslaved man who Huck is on the raft with, who he runs off with. I just think that the voice that Everett gives James is fantastic. And as a pairing, I mean, obviously you could read Huck Finn, but this most reminded me of Wide Sargasso Sea by Jean Rhys, which is the retelling of Jane Eyre from the perspective of Bertha. And Wide Sargasso Sea is so pivotal to our understanding of Jane Eyre now. Like, even if you've never read it, even if you've never heard of it, probably the way you were taught or read Jane Eyre was influenced by Wide Sargasso Sea because of how much it has changed the conversation around Jane Eyre and Bertha as a character. And I think the same is going to be true eventually for James by Percival Everett, that like you will not be able to read or teach Huck Finn without this kind of the influences of this piece as a novel and as a piece of literary criticism. So highly recommend James. It's out March 19th.
I'm really excited to read that one, and I'm sure we'll end up discussing it in a bonus episode or on the main feed or something. We're going to want to talk about it.
Yes,
for sure.
For sure.
So Sarah, it looks like we're saving most of our April books for a bonus.
Yeah, I mean, I can talk about more. I'm like, I realized that I had more on here than I thought. So I've been like trying to. Well, let me talk about my first April one, and then I'll see if I do a second one.
Okay.
Clear by, I don't know if it's Carrie Stavies. First of all, again, the cover. That's what struck my, caught my eye initially with this book. It is like an kind of like a, it's like a painting of a stormy ocean, which actually there are a lot of books that look like this spring. So I don't know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like Great Expectations is another one that looks a lot like this book. But this one, it's about a minister named John. He's Scottish, and he has been tasked with traveling to this remote island in northern Scotland to evict, to like basically get rid of the last person who has been living there. And he doesn't really want to go, but he's like, he needs the job. His wife is very concerned about this, and he gets there, and he immediately encounters danger and ends up in trouble, and is cared for by this last man on the island. They don't speak a common language, and I think a relationship forms beyond language. This takes place in the mid 19th century. I have not heard the phrase the Scottish clearances, but I mean, it's basically what these are, like people like in through the government and or through the church, being tasked with clearing, the last remaining kind of Scotsmen from these more remote places. So this sounds a lot like The Colony by Audrey McGee, which is about something very similar, but in Ireland. It sounds a lot like This Other Eden by Paul Harding, which came out last year and was very critically acclaimed. So I think if you liked those books, but also if you like very evocative senses of place, or if you, I mean, I really love that setting, like the Northern Scottish setting. And I really like books that feature like forgotten languages. So this sounds great. It's only 200 pages, which I also appreciate. So that is Clear, and it is out April 2nd.
All right. I have, I don't know, kind of something unique here for April 16th. It's an essay and it's being released in a really cool, giftable, pretty edition. This essay is A Few Rules for Predicting the Future, an essay by Octavia Butler. And this was originally published in 2000 in Essence magazine. So you might be able to still find it online somewhere or through your library, but the giftable edition looks really cool. We tend to see these kinds of things come out in the spring, the giftable essays, the in a new pretty volume, the speeches, because they're great graduation gifts. But I don't know, I like the idea of reading an essay in a little book format, kind of like a room of one's own, where you get to really annotate it and read it a couple times and have a very different, I don't know, the reading experience feels different to me if you're just reading an essay online versus in a book format in your hand. So this essay is about what it sounds like. She has four main guidelines for predicting the future or for dealing with the future. To learn from the past, to respect the law of consequences, to be aware of your own perspectives, and to count on surprises. This essay also goes into the warning signs of fascism, talking about fear, talking about hope and wishful thinking and what the difference is there, suggestions for how to shape the future and how to have hope for something good. The pull quote from the description here is, "There's no single answer that will solve all our future problems. There's no magic bullet. Instead, there are thousands of answers, at least. You can be one of them if you choose to be." So I just think this sounds great. Again, giftable, but if you are interested at all in any of those topics, it sounds very timely. And I'm looking forward to reading this one. I think obviously it would pair well with Octavia Butler's work, The Parable of the Sower, which is a work of dystopian science fiction, a way to familiar future in the United States, and has a lot of themes that I think will be all too recognizable to modern readers, particularly in the kind of vein of fascism. So The Parable of the Sower would be a great pairing if you want to keep reading some more Octavia Butler. But I also think the short story collection by N.K. Jemisin, How Long Till Black Future Month, which features short stories in the realm of Afrofuturism, would make a great pairing here too. And N.K. Jemisin has some great essays that would probably pair well in addition to her short stories. But How Long Till Black Future Month, I think, would make a great pairing. Also just super giftable. Like any of these books paired together or as a trio, I think would make a really great gift beyond just gifting the pretty essay. So that is A Few Rules for Predicting the Future by Octavia Butler, out April 16th.
All right, let's go to May. We'll save some other April picks for Patreon. I want to talk about this book, The Ministry of Time. How would you say her first name? Kellyanne?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, K-A-L-I-A-N-E, Bradley. Debut author, so I haven't been able to find pronunciation online. But I think she's about to be everywhere because this book is everywhere. Have you seen this all over Instagram, Chelsea?
I'm pretty sure I have.
Yeah. This is out from Avid Reader Press, and I tend to really be intrigued by what they put out. I think that they are like a pretty, I mean, they do some great nonfiction. They also like do some literary fiction that seems to really appeal to like millennial and even Gen Z readers, like books that may blow up on TikTok or kind of like some of what how I think about them. Like she, like they published that Claire Pollard book, The Oracle of Delphi, that has like a great, like very TikTok-y cover. I think that's what that book is called. Anyways, this book is being described as a time travel romance, a speculative spy thriller, a workplace comedy, and an ingeniously constructed exploration of the nature of truth and power and the potential for love to change it.
So It's a lot in one book.
Yes. It might be too much. Only time will tell. And it's gotten, I mean, it is everywhere, but it is already getting mixed reviews. I have heard that the first galleys that went out were like put out way too early. Like there were a lot of like typos and issues with the galleys. So that could be part of why we've seen mixed reviews already. But it is about a young woman who is a bridge is what she's called. She is supposed to like assist and monitor this man named Commander Graham Gore. He is living in the now or the future, but he is from 1847. And this is a world where time travel is like being explored. Clearly it's possible, but they're kind of wondering like, how possible is this? Like, will things change? What will happen to people as they are like living in this modern world, but they aren't used to outlandish concepts, says the back cover, like washing machines and the collapse of the British Empire. I think it's going to be quite tongue-in-cheek. I hope it is, because I think if it's too earnest, it could go wrong. But I really loved that show that came out a while ago, I think on HBO, called Be Foreigners. Did you watch that, Chelsea?
No.
Oh, it's like a buddy cop show that takes place in modern Sweden, where people from three different time periods, like cave people, like prehistoric man, Victorians, and Vikings have come into the, like there are three different like time slippages that they've come into. and it's like a modern woman paired up with a Viking woman paired up with this modern cop, and she's supposed to like, you know, try and be kind of a liaison between him and these Be Foreigners. Be Foreigners is a great
That's a really great name. Title.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And it was so fun, and it didn't take itself too seriously, but it took itself seriously enough. Like it bought into its premise enough that you really like cared. So I'm hopeful that something like this could really, really work. I'm excited to try it. It sounds, of course, like it would be a great pairing for, well, Be Foreigners, for Outlander. It reminds me of The Austin Project. Remember that book, Chelsea, where like the woman, the scholars go back to try and stop Jane Austen from dying? Mm-hmm. And then my other pairing is The Space Between Worlds by Micaiah Johnson, which is a sci-fi novel from a couple years ago that I really, really loved. It's different because it is not about time travel. This is about traveling between Space Between Worlds is about traveling between different dimensions. But the idea that like they're like this type of travel isn't necessarily good for the human body and who we are willing to risk with doing this dangerous project and what the implications are for different stratified classes sounds like tangentially related to the Ministry of Time. So if you have not read The Space Between Worlds, listeners, it's so good. It's a sci-fi book that just really, really, I think, nails what really good sci-fi can do, which is you feel totally transported to a different world, but you also recognize the meta commentary that's happening about like our present day. It's fantastic. So Ministry of Time is out May 7th. And before then, highly recommend picking up The Space Between Worlds by Micaiah Johnson.
All right. On May 14th, a book I'm very excited about and had not heard anything about until I was doing some research for this episode is out. Oye, I hope I'm not butchering that, by Melissa Mogollon. Oh gosh, this sounds so good, Sarah. So this is a coming-of-age kind of comic novel plus family saga, but it is all told through telephone call transcripts. So we have our main character, Luciana, and she is the youngest in a big Colombian family, and they live in South Florida. And her grandmother is refusing to leave for a hurricane evacuation. And so she's like partly dealing with her grandmother. Her older sister, Mari, is away at college. And there's just a bunch of family stuff going on. In addition to that, Luciana tends to sneak out of her house and go meet up with other girls to go and smooch. But because her grandmother is staying in her bedroom with her, she can't do that. So there's all of this stuff going on. She's in her senior year of high school, and suddenly she is a caretaker. She's kind of thrust into a new phase of life that she wasn't prepared for. And so she basically talks to her sister over the phone about everything that's happening. And so we've got entertaining conversations between sisters, but also just like a lot of heartfelt, spill your guts kind of stuff. I would read this if it was just a straightforward novel in plain prose, but the fact that it's all told through telephone conversations is what really intrigues me. I'm always interested when an author takes on that kind of unique structure. And it sounds really lovely, and it sounds like warm literary fiction. And cover is beautiful, again. I immediately thought of Elizabeth Acevedo's work and The Poet X specifically because it's a coming-of-age story, and Acevedo writes stories in verse. And so kind of taking into account that unique way of storytelling, this is not a novel in verse, but it's told through telephone transcripts. And so I think that, I don't know, another novel with a unique structure is a great pairing here. And The Poet X is so good. We love Elizabeth Acevedo. Her writing is stunning and beautiful. I also think Family Lore, her newer novel, which also uses a lot of recordings and transcripts and has kind of a unique structure, could probably pair well here as in addition to The Poet X. But The Poet X is a coming-of-age story. This is a coming-of-age story. It sounds so good. I'm really looking forward to reading this one. So that's Oye by Melissa Mogollon, and it's out May 14th.
All right, my final pick is Lies and Weddings by Kevin Kwan. I never read the Crazy Rich Asians trilogy, but I loved Sex and Vanity a couple years ago, which was a retelling of A Room with a View. I can't tell if this one's a retelling too, but it sounds like it could be based on the premise. So Rufus Luong Gresham, future Duke of Greshambury, and son of a former Hong Kong supermodel, is in financial trouble. His family has been wealthy for many, many years, but they have depleted all of their finances by, partying on their big yacht and all those sorts of things. So Rufus, because he needs to keep the family line running, is tasked with, at his sister's wedding, finding a wealthy woman to marry, to refill the coffers of this ancient family. And I love Kevin Kwan is so good at fun details. So I just love this part of the description. Should he marry Celine de Courcy, a French hotel heiress with honey blonde tresses and a royal bloodline? Should he pursue Martha Dung, the tattooed venture capitalist genius who passes out billions like lollipops? Or should he follow his heart, betray his family, squander his legacy, and finally confess his love to the literal girl next door, the humble daughter of a doctor? I don't really even care what this book is about. I just want to be at one of Kevin Kwan's fancy parties for part of a book. I think he writes those so well. That was my favorite part of Sex and Vanity, was also started with a wedding filled with millionaires and billionaires. And I just thought that the way he writes those scenes are so smart and so funny. There's like very, very biting and astute commentary on race and class. And it's all not buried, but it's all gilded with this very glitzy world that he writes. So I just, this is the kind of thing that I really don't love a ton of, like, the big summer reading kind of books. But when Kevin Kwan writes one, I just, I'm there. I cannot wait. So of course this would pair with his other books. I thought it might pair well with Free Food for Millionaires by Min Jin Lee, but it sounds a little House of Mirth, right? Like somebody who is desperately trying to pursue a spouse with with a lot of wealth, but their heart is somewhere else. And so I don't know, again, like, I don't know if this is an actual retelling of anything. Based on the description, I couldn't, like, peg it as, like, oh, this is absolutely a retelling for fill in the blank. But of course it seems very inspired by a lot of marriage plot classic novels. And so I know I'm going to love that. So Kevin Kwan's Lies and Weddings and maybe House of Mirth by Edith Wharton, if you're ready for more Wharton in your life.
Always. Now I'm like, yes, more Wharton. Okay. My final May book here is also feels very summery. I think, you know, towards the end of May, you're kind of getting into the summer reading season anyway, but it is A Gamble at Sunset by Vanessa Riley. And Vanessa Riley is an interesting author to me. She kind of starts her career in historical romance, but then she moves into historical fiction. Her last few novels have been very firmly in the historical fiction realm. Island Queen is one of them. And she's received a lot of accolades for that. And obviously, if you're writing historical romance, like, you can write deeper historical fiction. You've done the research. So she's back with a new series in historical Regency era romance called A Gamble at Sunset. Is the first in the new series. And the cover is really stunning. Looks just like Queen Charlotte. And the description is really convoluted and there's a lot happening, so I'm not going to try and summarize here. But according to Vanessa Riley herself, you can expect a lot of angst, a Pygmalion attraction, sexy piano lessons, Regency era science, a lying loser ex-friend, sisters with secrets, lots of scandals, and a broken-hearted duke with unrequited love for the one who got away. All of that sounds like really fun summer reading, and she is going to throw in so much great historical detail. So I just think this sounds really fun and like it would pair great with watching the Bridgertons and Queen Charlotte over summer. And instead of pairing this with a single book, I just want to say I think this goes really well with our Pairings for Period Dramas episode. If you like period dramas, I think this book pairs just with period dramas, period. Lots of scandal, lots of history, glitz and glamour, great characters. So that is A Gamble at Sunset by Vanessa Riley, and I'm really excited to pick this one up, out May 21st.
That sounds fun. Lies and Weddings is also out May 21st. I'm not sure I said that. So I think you're right. May 21st must be the
summer
demarcation line. Mm-hmm. We're starting summer reading. All right. Well, we are going to be sharing some additional spring books that we're excited about over on Patreon on Friday, the Friday following this episode. So if you're not signed up already, head over there. You can join, get access to our entire back catalog, and then find out what other books we're excited to read this spring.
Yeah, sign up for our Substack. We'll make sure that we put a bunch of the pretty covers that we talked about today in our Substack newsletter, so you can just go and look at all of them put together, all cute. And you should follow us on Instagram if you're not already. We are at Novel Pairings Pod. Let's see, we already talked about Patreon, patreon.com/novelpairings. Those are all of the great ways to find us. Our Substack newsletter is free every week, and we're having a lot of fun over there sharing announcements and news, but also extra resources, behind the scenes stuff. And I think that we will have some, maybe even have some guest posts over there soon. So you should sign up now so you can get access to all of that. If you read any of these books or you're excited about them, we would love for you to tag us on Instagram and social media and for you to continue sharing this podcast. Any reviews help. So if you have not left us a review on Apple Podcast, please do so. And we're just really excited to have you all with us for another season of reading.
Thank you to our executive producers, Karen, Diane, Emma, Dilma, Kathy, Amy, and Jody, and to our entire Patreon community who keeps our podcast running. Thank you to Miles Eichner and Mark Anderson for our theme music. We will be back soon with an episode on Bride's Head Revisited by Evelyn Waugh. Until then, we declare, after all, there is no enjoyment like reading. How much sooner one tires of anything than of a book.